all heard it before. It's who you know. Now hear why it's so true. Welcome to Social Capital, a weekly podcast where we dive into social relationships and how the investment you put into them establishes trust, reciprocity, and value within your network and community. Your host, Lori Hybe, will connect with top professionals and dive into their best networking stories and techniques to share with you.
Hey everybody, Lori Hybe here. Welcome to the Social Capital Podcast. Our show notes are found at socialcapitalpodcast.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at LJ Hybe and on Facebook. This week's guest is Kurt Rather. Kurt is a producer, director, and entrepreneur who's been working in the Milwaukee creative industry for 6 years. A graduate from the UWM Film School in 2011, he started his career at the Shepherd Express before opening his first production company, Honeycomb Productions. In 2014, he partnered with Peer Creatives Matt Sablejack and Sam Hogerton to form SRH Marketing, a quickly growing advertising agency with 12 employees and offices in Milwaukee and Chicago. Kurt plays a unique role at the company. He is the primary creative director of video projects for clients like Palermo's and Harley-Davidson. And he's also in charge of the operations, process development, and growth strategy for all departments. Through SRH, he also produces films with local filmmakers, including two feature films and several shorts. As a director, his recent documentary project, Little America, won the Golden Badger at the Wisconsin Film Festival. And he has several other projects in development currently. Well, Kurt, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Excited to learn a little bit about this background in the film space. I'm sure you've got lots of great networking stories to share.
Yeah, and it's great to be back here in the Marshall Building, kind of where I got my start with the Shepherd Express and where I think we first worked together on some video projects. And it's just cool to be back in this place. There's so much character here. I love this building.
There is. I'm sure you were excited to probably walk in again, weren't you?
Yeah, it was a little bit of, it's been a couple of years and it was really neat.
Nice. All right, so how do you prioritize and manage the time when you're wearing so many different hats in a growing business?
Yeah, so I think when you start any company, and I think you probably know this well too, when you start a company, you have to wear all of the hats that will eventually be worn by other people. Mm-hmm. And an important part, I think I learned this from The E-Myth, probably one of those like sort of seminal books on entrepreneurship.
Yep.
One of the most important things that you can do is identify which hats you're wearing, and you sort of kind of split your personality, and it kind of helps by bifurcating all the different things that you do. It helps you manage it a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And then it also helps when you are hiring people on, you already have a really good understanding of what they need to do when they come in. So, you know, I'm kind of a time management freak. So I'm just very good at understanding what hat I'm wearing and when, and that helps a lot to manage all those different roles and responsibilities. And I think the other thing too that's important to know is when you are wearing a lot of those hats when you start out, they may not all be full-time hats. And as soon as they become that, that's when you hire someone. So for instance, we actually just hired already. I think I gave you that bio a few weeks ago, and it's already almost obsolete because we just hired somebody to take care of a lot of my operations duties.
Oh, so smart.
Yeah, we were getting to a point as we scale that we just need somebody who's been doing that for 20 years. And we brought somebody from a large agency over to take over that role for me. And what he's been able to do in a couple of weeks is more than I was able to do in a year. But I didn't have, it wasn't a full hat, if that makes any sense. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, I think you just realize that you're doing a little bit of everyone's job as an entrepreneur, and you just have to, you understand you're maybe not the best in the world at it, and until you can hire the best, you just do what you can do.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been in those shoes many of times.
Yeah.
So I know that you're not super active in the digital space, even though that's obviously what it is that you're doing for your customer base, but what's your favorite blog?
Ooh, my favorite blog. Oh my gosh. You know, I'm not a big blog reader, to be totally honest. I think there's a few writing blogs that I really like. Mm-hmm. I think writing is the if you think about all the different creative things that we do as filmmakers or as even marketers and advertisers, writing is kind of the core skill. And it's probably the thing a lot of people jump over to get to some of the other things, but it's by far the hardest of all of them. So there's a screenwriting blog called Script Notes. It's also a really great podcast, probably the only podcast I listen to on the regular. It's by these two screenwriters in Los Angeles, and it's just a really, really easy guide to good writing.
Nice. Okay. Here's another favorite question then. Okay. What is your favorite place in Wisconsin?
My favorite place in Wisconsin, this is actually really easy, and anyone who's my friend that's listening to this will laugh. My favorite place in Wisconsin is the Horicon Marsh. It's about an hour northwest of Milwaukee.
Okay.
The Horicon Marsh is the largest cattail freshwater marsh in America. It's just 33,000 acres of uninterrupted wetlands, lots of birds, just beautiful prairie-like landscape. It's kind of surrounded by hills that have like windmills on them. And it's just, it's one of the most gorgeous places. And it's just outside of Milwaukee, only an hour away. And I go there to write. And
nice.
So my friends jokingly call me Bog Boy. Because I'm just really interested in, I think, this thing that a lot of people probably just drive right by, but it's by far my favorite place in the state.
I have not given it its proper, respect, I would say. I need to put some time into just kind of observing and appreciating that space.
Check it out in May. Go on the pontoon. There's a sightseeing tour where they take you on pontoons, and this fabulous birder will make you feel like you're on a jungle safari in the middle of Wisconsin.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. I'm definitely going to put that on my bucket list items. Okay. So to some people, networking is a very scary word and it evokes fear, hesitation, and uncertainty. I want to remove some of that fear, and hopefully you can share with me your most successful or favorite networking story.
Yeah, I think especially for artists, right? I went to art school, and a lot of my friends are particularly terrified of the idea of networking.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand it very well, and I'm no different. I'm introverted. I'm happiest when I'm alone in my room working on a project. But networking is very necessary. My favorite networking experience was probably when I met my business partner Matt Sablejack. Which was in 2013 or so. I was at an event at the Milwaukee Film Festival. I was there to see writers talking about scripts. And there was just another guy in the audience who I thought was asking really smart questions and seemed like a cool dude who knew what he was doing. And I just went up and talked to him. And through talking, we kind of knew each other by reputation. And we went our separate ways and didn't start working together for a year after that. But I think I knew at that moment that some way, shape, or form we were going to work well together.
Okay.
Because we were so different in the best ways possible.
Okay.
Right? So, I think a lot of people think of networking as finding your own flock, your own people. But I'm not sure that, although we've since become great friends, I don't think we would have, if without the common goals that we both wanted. Beyond those common goals, we're two very different people. He's very charismatic. He's very well networked. He's probably the best networker I know. I'm very detail oriented, very obsessive, and the two of us together, we've been able to do a lot in a short time. And the reason we met was just because we happened to be an event for an interest that we both shared. For some reason, the questions he was asking really struck me, and it provided an opportunity to go and talk to him and like get over my fears and go walk up to him and say, "Hey, when you said that, I thought that was really smart. What's your deal?" He said, "Oh, thanks. What's your deal?" And just kind of went from there.
That's really nice. I like that you said a couple things here that were really of interest. One, and you just said it was you get over your fear and just said, like, this guy's really interesting. There's something about him that I need to go talk to him, right? And I liked how you said, you know, finding your people. I thought that was really intriguing too, that even though it is, networking is about finding those people and what mm-hmm. is that common ground, you know, the common goals that you had, that that's what brought you to this event initially. And you probably went, this is an assumption I'm making, just for your own educational peak, right? Just, totally. I'm interested in this, so I'm going to go and see what other people are saying. You did not have any goal of saying, I need to meet someone else so that I can start a business, right? So I'm curious, you know, 2013, you met him, and now you're business partners. What was the time frame from when you started the business, you know, from when you met him to when you said, hey,
yeah,
you know, this is something that we should do together?
Well, in typical small walkie fashion, let's see. I had my video production company, and he was working at another agency. So there was an immediate, obvious way we could work together. And I did a video for his agency. It happened to be that another person at his agency I had been good friends with in college. We had worked at the UWM Post together when I was running that. So we worked together on a project, and eventually in 2014, fates kind of conspired where they were ready to leave that agency, and I was ready to kind of have partners. I was running a business on my own, mm-hmm. And video is great, but I wanted to be able to offer more to clients and get a little bit higher up the chain. It just all kind of worked out, and they left their agency. I dissolved my company, and we merged it together.
Wow.
It helped that, I mean, Matt, they're both 5 years older than me, okay. which I think is another important thing. I think you should.
A little bit more experience.
Yeah, they were more experienced than I was. So I had a lot to learn from them, and that helped out a lot when we were getting started.
Sure.
So that was really great. And I think to your point, I think when people are afraid to go walk up and talk to someone else at an event, it's often because I don't think they're afraid to talk to people. I think they're afraid to pretend to people, right? They're afraid to pretend that they're somebody that they're not, or try to project something that they think they should be to another person.
Sure.
Like that's kind of scary.
To some degree, I understand that.
Well, so
I try to be as real as possible.
Yeah, sorry. No, I can, if I'm let go, I can get too pretentious, I think. I guess what I'm saying is a lot of networking, if you go in with a goal to try to pretend to be someone you're not, it's not going to go well.
Correct.
And you're going to be scared, and you're going to be nervous, and you're not going to come off well. If you share a common interest with someone and you're real about that interest, yep. and you're both real about it, you've created a sort of starting point for a relationship and for rapport. And that's, I think, what's most important.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what built that trust, obviously, mm-hmm. between you and your business partner, Matt.
Yeah, we both love movies. We both want to make movies. We both do very different things, but we have a common goal and a common interest.
So I know that you mentioned you're an introvert, but you've also acknowledged the importance of networking. And I know that, you know, you alluded to small walkie, which there's a lot of truth to that, but it is a fairly large mm-hmm. city. I mean, if you look at other communities, and I know that your network is fairly extensive. So what do you do to stay in front of or best nurture your network?
To best nurture my network, I think, I'm gonna talk about scarcity versus, maintaining a big network, which might not be what all your guests talk about. But there's a really good book called Good in a Room by Stephanie Palmer. Good in a Room is a book by a Hollywood executive about how she networks and pitches films and that sort of thing. And something that she said that I found really valuable was it's a lot easier to maintain a network of VIPs than it is to maintain a giant network of people. You know, in my opinion, once you're getting to a network, and now this is as an artist, not as a salesperson, right? So it can
sure.
be, right? Depending on what your goals are in networking, this could change. But what she said that resonated to me was focus on your 20 or so VIPs and developing deep relationships with them,
yep.
because that is going to most probably generate more business or art or whatever it is for you than having 100 people that you maybe touch base with once a year or
yeah.
by email blast or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
so much. I mean, you know this. We love doing work with our friends, and the best networking you can do is to develop deep relationships with someone, and that takes time.
Yep.
So to do that with 100 people, there's not enough time in a lifetime. But to do that with like 10 to 20 people is a lot easier. So that's kind of my philosophy. There's 10 or 20 people that are really important to me, that are connectors. They're connected to other people. They themselves may have resources. They themselves may be, whether they're artistic or monetary. And if I do need something that's outside my VIPs, generally, I look at my VIPs as connectors to other people. Mm-hmm. And that often ends up being a lot better than just cold calling someone, because I can get a reference from somebody that I know well and know deeply.
Sure.
And that's a more valuable connection than like a cold call.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that there's a lot of truth to what you're saying. You know, it's good to know people, but you really need to have some really strong and balanced relationships that it's kind of your go-to. You know, it's a sounding board, but a resource, and you support each other. It's not a one-way connection, right?
Exactly.
You're part of their 10 or 20 as well,
yes.
Right? So it's just kind of a reciprocity component, right?
That's so correct. You have to look at networking as, how can I help my people and how can my people help me? If you look at networking as just as, what can this person do for me, you're never going to develop the relationships that matter and the relationships that will give you traction.
Mm-hmm.
You have to look at your network as, what have I done for them? How can I help them out? And I try to start there if I can.
Yep. Yeah, I agree with that 100%. Mm-hmm. You know, what can I do for you? Mm-hmm. Is there something that you need assistance with? Great. That's really good advice. Speaking of advice, what advice would you offer the business professional who is looking to grow their network?
Yeah, so if you're kind of starting out and you know, again, of course, I'd always ask, what is your goal for networking? What is your reason for networking? Are you a salesperson that's trying to develop more leads? Are you a business owner that's trying to grow resources? Are you an artist that's trying to get your thing made, right? You always have to start with, what is your goal? And then my advice after that would be, once you know your goal, follow your passion. So I'm going to put on a hat of a salesperson that I kind of need a huge Rolodex, right? I need to have a lot of different things in the funnel. Start where it's going to be easiest for you to find a connection with people. You know, like, search. Obviously, you need to find your customer, right? But once within your customer base, see if you can find that subset, that group where you think you can develop the quickest, best relationships because you have something in common.
Yeah.
Otherwise you're building a taller mountain for yourself than you necessarily need to. So focusing on rapport, focusing on VIPs, focusing on people that you can help first before they help you.
Yeah.
And then it kind of snowballs after a little bit, right? After you develop like 5 or 6 of those really good relationships, it just snowballs. And they refer you to someone else and to someone else to someone else. I mean, as soon as you can get a good referral base going, you're set.
Yeah.
You know?
But you've got to nurture those opportunities.
Yeah.
You really can't just take.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's give, right?
Yep. Yep. When I was starting my company, I mean, man, even we worked together on some early stuff, like, I was just doing video for whoever I could do it for. I was reaching out to companies in this building that we're in right now, Reginald Baylor, Keystone Click, Shepherd Express. I was just trying to figure out, who can I help and who can I give something that I have a skill that they need. And I didn't make a lot of money doing it.
Yeah.
I didn't, it wasn't like I immediately was just raking in the cash. But through that, like, somebody saw something and then another person saw this, and eventually I was able to develop a relationship with Savage Solutions, which is an agency that's also in the Third Ward.
Sure.
And that became my first like kind of anchor
client.
But I didn't, I had to kind of work my way through a portfolio for free by helping people out.
Yep. We've all been there.
Oh yeah. And that's always a tricky game too, because you don't want to you don't want to devalue your work either. So
correct.
it's always a big fight to try to and there's a lot of people out there who will take advantage of that as well, because they know that people who are just starting out. So when you're just starting out, there's a lot of people that you will work with that probably won't be long-term clients because they might be taking advantage of the fact that you're starting out.
Yeah.
And trying to separate those two can be a challenge.
Yeah. I think there's 2 points I want to share with that, but you do have to build your portfolio, especially if you are in some creative space, mm-hmm. right? Or something that says, I really do know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
And there is that, you know, barter arrangement that often occurs, and I believe there is value in it as long as it is a true, genuine win-win situation. But it's hard to identify, you know, if someone is taking advantage of you, which is unfortunate. Alternatively, going back to that word of passion, if it is a passion project and you're mm-hmm. going to put your heart and soul into it, then you're winning because of that, even though you may not be getting some actual tangible return out of it besides it's a passion project. So, building your portfolio is definitely important. Nice. Okay, so digital networking or traditional networking, which one do you find more value in?
That's a great question. I've been thinking a lot about this recently, actually, because we have been focusing for the first time, I think, on marketing our own business, which is another amazing step as an entrepreneur when you get to the point where you can kind of look at how you're marketing yourself. And what I mean by that is that's when your sort of analog network starts running its course or feels very saturated, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we built our whole company from referrals and sort of, you know, real life analog networking, right? And at a certain point, you do have to increase the funnel. So what I love about digital is it allows you to really quickly scale your marketing efforts, your networking efforts, to at least try to develop new relationships. I don't think that digital is very good for creating deep relationships. And that's my personal opinion. I think it's very good for branding. So what digital allows us to do is develop a sort of it's the way we can develop our brand to the world, who we are, what we're all about, why we matter, etc. Mm-hmm. Right. If you're really good with social media, which I am personally not, but if you are really good with it, you can develop your brand through that. You mm-hmm. can connect with people across the United States that share similar passions as you.
Sure.
And that's what digital is really, really good for.
Yep.
But at some point that moves offline into like a deeper conversation. And that's where, so I think for me, again, real world networking has been more valuable.
Sure.
But I am like realizing that at a certain point, when you reach a saturation point, digital networking is a really good way to open up more opportunities for traditional networking.
Correct. They kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, different guests that I've had on the show, they start traditional is where the origin of the relationship begins and they mm-hmm. leverage digital to nurture.
Sure.
But you're kind of talking from a different perspective of use digital to reach further than you can in that traditional space mm-hmm. In hopes of then having that traditional conversation to do that deeper relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it can go either way, really. And again, I think it's to what you said earlier, what is your goal? Right.
Exactly.
And then building your plan and strategy kind of around that. I also wanted to circle back to the branding component, because I think this is today, more importantly than ever before, someone's personal brand is so critical to their continuous ongoing success. And the digital space is the place that your personal brand is going to be easily seen by everyone else.
So. I have a good thought on this, I think, because I've been so I think a lot of people shy away from. I'm going to talk about artists now.
Sure.
Artists shy away from at least the ones that I know, like shy kind of away from over branding themselves, because to them it feels kind of false or misrepresentation, and you know it feels kind of hokey and like too much like marketing and all that kind of stuff. But what online branding or, you know, getting yourself online, what it does for you is it does half the work. Half of making an argument for why someone should work with you or give you resources is the ethos, like the character,
mm-hmm.
right? That's half of arguing, and most people make decisions based on their judgment of character.
Mm-hmm.
And when you can shape your appearance and your character and who you are online, you have the tools and ability to do that very carefully, which mm-hmm. is really great.
Yep.
And that's what it should be used for. So you really, if you look at it as not just a sort of narcissistic exercise about trumpeting your own achievements and more as like a way to help somebody understand where you're coming from and who you are and what you have to bring to the table ahead of time,
mm-hmm.
it's really, really helpful.
Yeah.
It's so much easier to send someone to my personal website now and just say like, here's my deal. Like, here's my work.
Yep.
Here's what's a little bit about me, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's very, very simple just to send that along.
Yeah. I agree with that 100% to the depth of even, people make assumptions, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of assumptions about who someone is or, someone else had an opinion and that just kind of got embedded into this other person's mind.
Right.
Where if you're taking control of your brand in the digital space, that's exactly what you're doing. You're controlling the perception and what this other person is seeing and trying to minimize any assumptions that are being made about you.
Yeah. And as long as you back it up. Because at the end of
that's
the day,
true.
Yeah, because you can see it where I think some people can over exaggerate their accomplishments on the internet, and then they may not be able to back that up, and that can be even worse for a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be kind of judicious with it.
There is a balance.
Yeah,
that needs
absolutely.
To be had.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. Cool. Good. That was a good dive. I like that conversation. All right, changing it up for a little fun here.
Okay.
If you could go back to your 20-year-old self, mm-hmm. what would you tell yourself to do more of, less of, or differently with regards to your professional career?
Well, I think if I could talk to my 20-year-old self, it would just be to focus. I think that's the thing. Just focus and try to get work done.
okay.
I think when you're 20, you think you have all the time in the world. And I'm 20, I just turned 29. Now it's like, I still feel like I have all the time in the world, but I have a renewed sense of, okay, time is speeding up. Things are moving faster. The years are moving faster. My time is more valuable to me at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm much more judicial with what I agree to spend time on.
Sure.
I still want to do the same things I wanted to do when I was 20. I feel like my priorities, life up to that point, it took me a lot of thinking and meditating to figure out what do I want to do with my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I still want to do the same things, but I think that I now understand more profoundly the amount of hard work that it takes to do those things. And, a lot through, I think this probably goes for a lot of people, a lot of time in my 20s, I congratulated myself for knowing what I wanted to do and just didn't sit down and do the work.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, great. I got it figured out. I know what I want to be. I have a sense of identity. Yay. Because I don't have that angst anymore that came with being a teenager. Like, I get it. I know what I want to do. Let's go nuts, And then, so I did a lot of, now I don't regret anything I did in my 20s, but I certainly, spent a lot of time, I played in a band called the Fatty Acids. That was really, really fun and made some really amazing friends and had some great experiences. Wasn't writing a lot of screenplays in my 20s. I wasn't failing a lot. And it wasn't until my mid 20s that I said, oh crap, if I want to make content, make movies, I better start making some stuff.
Sure.
Better start actually doing it.
Roll up the sleeves, get down and dirty.
Yeah. So if I could talk to my 20-year-old self, it would just be like, hey, all that, I know you think you're really busy right now. I know you think you got a lot of stuff going on, but you have more time now than you're ever going to have.
Yeah.
Sit down and use that time to crank out some work, and it's going to suck, and that's going to be okay. And just do it.
Yeah. Nike style.
Just
do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's good. Really good advice. Okay, so we've all heard of the 6 degrees of separation. Now, who would be the one person you'd love to connect with, and do you think you could do it within the 6th degree?
Well, I think technically, probably, you can connect with almost anyone on the planet in 6 degrees, depending on how you define a degree. My answer for that would probably be, I want to pick someone that I'm really separated with and who seems like really far away, and that would be Jonathan Glazer. Jonathan Glazer is an English filmmaker who, he's an English filmmaker, not super well known, But you've seen commercials that he's done. He's done a lot of brilliant commercials, really brilliant music videos. And he's written and directed, I think, 3 feature films that have all been really great, really excellent. Under the Skin was his most recent one, which is this really creepy sci-fi with Scarlett Johansson, where she's an alien that takes people's skin. It's a dark film. Yeah, I don't, you know, it's
that,
Halloween.
Not my cup of tea, hey, but I get it.
It's Halloween today. It's a Halloween show. It's really well done. Anyway, so how would I start networking with him? Well, I mean, I think it would kind of be similar to my previous answer, which is just do the work first. I think I could probably get his email pretty easily somehow by working my way through people I know in LA and New York and agents, and I could probably eventually get an email and send him an email. But mm-hmm. if that email doesn't contain anything, any work of interest to him or anything that's valuable to him, what point, what use is it? So my quickest way to Jonathan Glazer is actually, and this is funny to say, but is would actually be to like make an amazing feature film, which can take 5 years, 10 yeah. years, right? That he would, but that would be the only way I could give him something, yeah. right? Which is the only way that I could ever maintain or develop a meaningful relationship.
Sure.
So, I could connect with him very easily, but whether that connection would mean anything, there would be a lot of things to do before
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I really like that you identified what is the value that I could make with this connection, because a lot of guests just, you know, there's always someone, like a celebrity figure, mm-hmm. someone that was very influential, an author or something. But there is no connection with this is the value that would be brought to the table mm-hmm. to really build a relationship. So that's really, really good perspective.
When I think about connecting with filmmakers or artists from the outside or in the outside world, Los Angeles, New York, like these big cities, sure. right? I think about it this way. If somebody from Mount Zion, Wisconsin, some filmmaker in the smallest town in Wisconsin reached out to me and just sent me an email and said, "Hey, I'd love to connect with you." I would be like, I'm kind of busy, right? Like yeah. I can empathize with that. I've got a lot of concerns in my life, but if that person sent me something that was just like arresting and just like, oh my God, I've got to talk to this person,
sure.
then I would develop a relationship.
Okay.
So I try to think of myself that way when I work with people in Los Angeles and New York on various commercial projects. Mm-hmm. And I always am thinking, before I would ever reach out to them with my own personal project, I would make sure I have something, and I have something that's good.
Sure.
Because everyone's really busy.
Yep.
And everyone else's time is really valuable to them too.
Yep.
So just harassing them on social media, tweeting at them, sending emails that don't have any sort of anything that would help their lives be easier is not a way to start a relationship.
No, it's really, really valid and critical piece of information is to be aware of everyone else's time. Mm-hmm. No one wants to have their time wasted. Mm-hmm. So being of value and bringing value is really important.
And don't overestimate, even if you think, I think everyone should think that their contributions to the world are very valuable, but don't overestimate that and try to think about it as if, you know, again, to kind of put yourself in their shoes and see if you can find an analogous way to think about it. That's very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Really good. All right. So I know that you've mentioned a couple of books, and as a fellow entrepreneur, you're probably a lifelong learner, just like I am. Mm-hmm. What book are you reading right now?
I think I'm in the middle of several. one of which is I'm trying to read more literature. Gravity. I'm trying to tackle Gravity's Rainbow right now, and it's an extremely difficult book. But as far as books that I think were kind of like easy reads and very, very valuable that I think about a lot, there's a book called Thank You for Arguing.
Okay.
That I think everyone in America should read.
Huh.
Thank You for Arguing is by Jay Heinrichs. It's a book about rhetoric. It's a book about the art of disagreement, the book about the art of persuasion and arguing. And so, I mean, if you listen to like talk radio today, mm-hmm. or really if you turn on the TV or the internet or anything, it's just really two people shouting their opinions out loud and not actually having a dialogue.
Sure.
This book kind of takes you back to the time of Aristotle and Socrates and like the beginning of argument. At one point, argument was, you know, two sensible people having a disagreement and trying to come to a conclusion and trying to crawl their way kind of closer to truth, not fight. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that we could use a little bit more of today. From a business application and a marketing application, it's also very helpful to understand tools of persuasion. Mm-hmm. So a lot of this book helps you understand the best way to persuade people and to try to have them understand your opinion and to bring them over to that. Sure. Right? It's like debate club. Yep. Right? We need more debate club in our country. and it's just a really well written book. It's really fun. It's super bite sized. It's easy to understand it, but it gives you a little more meat, I think, than some of the traditional self-help books, which I can find can be a little too surface level. Mm-hmm. Like they just kind of give you some rules, but they don't like give you the logic behind them or the history of them. You've got everything from Eminem rap battles to Lincoln's addresses in this book and how the tools of rhetoric are used in all of them.
Yeah.
Very, very good.
Oh, I'm going to have to add that one to my
It's really good.
List.
I've used it on clients when I'm trying to argue for why they should do kind of a crazy creative idea. Huh. I've used it in my marketing, in my scripts, to convince customers why they should buy a product. It's very valuable.
Nice. Sounds like a good read for sure.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So any final word or advice to offer our listeners with regards to growing and supporting your network?
If there's anything I haven't said yet, it's probably just, again, substance. If I could pick a central theme to my networking, it's just substance. Have something of substance to offer people, whether that's art, whether it's a product, whether it's a relationship that will benefit them. Like, always be thinking about how can I help this person? How can I give them something of substance? And you'll probably go pretty far. You're putting your effort more into coming up with something of substance than you are into like developing a 10,000 person network, right?
Sure.
The time is there no matter what. Mm-hmm. So you can either spend all of your time being at networking events and going out and developing like a vast network of people, but that vast network of people isn't very helpful to you unless you have something helpful to offer them.
Correct.
So for me, it's like sink the time into the developing something of value and substance first, and then network.
Yep.
And you can do the both simultaneously, but I think the substance part is the most important. And as an introvert, that's the part that I'm most comfortable with.
Yep.
I like tinkering. I like just working on something of value, and I like putting my time into that. So that's to me what's the most important.
Mm,
I mean, we really wanted a wrinkle is that for some people their network is that substance.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of an interesting. So the reason I said that is I'm thinking about why myself and Matt Sablejack work so well together. Is that his like vast? He knows somebody for anything, right?
Sure.
His vast network is in some ways his skill set. He's also very creative and very very intelligent marketing strategist. But his network does kind of become a product as well, which is another just interesting thing to think about. But for me, the best thing I can do, the most effort I can put into something is into the work. And nice. Then I just find people that need it.
Yeah, that's good. Really good advice for
sure.
So if anyone was interested in getting in contact with you, what's the best way that they can reach you?
Yeah, so I think if they just go to my website, which is my name, KurtRather.com, there's my work is on there, and there's contact for both SRH Marketing, which is my company,
mm-hmm.
and myself as well. Or they could go to srhmarketing.com and see some of the work that we've been doing.
Cool. And we'll include those links in the show notes.
Awesome.
Well, thanks so much for being on the show today, Kurt.
Yeah, thank you. This was fun.
It was a lot of fun. This wraps up our episode of Social Capital. A huge thank you to Kurt Rather for taking the time to connect with us. Join us next week for another great guest as we continue the conversation on networking and building your community. If you need me, send an email to Lori@socialcapitalpodcast.com. Otherwise, we'll see you next week.
That's all for this episode of the Social Capital Podcast. Be sure to visit socialcapitalpodcast.com for show notes, more episodes, and to check out our free ebooks on business and networking.